Welcome to the Pride of Detroit podcast, the PODcast, starring everyone here from prideofdetroit.com. Yours truly at Pride of Detroit on Twitter. Find us on Facebook, Pride of Detroit, for all the Detroit Lions news, analysis, and every other need you need to know about your Detroit Lions football team. I am Chris Lemieux, now on Twitter at Detroit Southern. I changed my handle. Finally happened. Congrats. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much for that, Jeremy. Jeremy Reisman, fearless leader at Detroit on Lion. Also in here, Alex Reno at Alex_Reno, and Ryan Matthews at Ryan POD, who is currently obsessed with, I'm sorry, I can't say it. He's shaking his head. That's getting beeped. Ryan won't even address the audience right now.
Should we bleep that?
It gets bleeped now, and now nobody knows what I'm obsessed with, so that they can run with it. They can take that however they want to run with it.
I know. That's the magic of podcasting.
Put your best guesses in the comment section of what Ryan is obsessed with.
Oh, that's pretty good. I like that.
We'll read the best answers next week.
Yes, we will. We will. We have another list cast for you this week, but before we get to that, we actually have some Lions news. We're actually going to get back to our apparent secondary, tertiary purpose of this podcast, which is talk about the Detroit Lions. So with that in mind, do we want to dive in? Do we need to do any housekeeping first?
Nope.
Actually, we do. Couple things. First off, if you're subscribed, you're listening to the podcast, we have two new podcasts in addition to our podcast episodes that are now up there, because we call it the podcast, the PODcast. It's getting really confusing. So this is PODcast number 42. But is it 43?
I think it is.
I think you're wrong, but we won't quibble.
Well, I think I'm right.
No, because our last one was 41 for running backs. So this is 42. We're spending too much time on the number. But either way, along with 42, if you go up there, you will find a mini pod. Jeremy Reisman spoke with Jim Billingsley, the father of Detroit Lions undrafted free agent rookie Jace Billingsley, and their small town of Winnemucca, Nevada, home population, I think, what is it, like 7,800 or something?
Just over 7,000, yeah.
Yeah, just over 7,000, and how they have basically dominated the name tournament this year, and like everything else about Jace and the small towns of America. We also have on there the first episode of NFC North Football Fights. I don't know if that's the final name. Kind of Mike Payton's little invention. He got together a bunch of guys. We had on Arif Hassan from Daily Norseman, Tex Western from Acme Packing Company, and Wilt Fong, I think I've got that name right, it's not in front of me, from Windy City Gridiron, and we kind of had a bit of a game show with myself and Ryan Matthews to kind of run the show. So you will find all that. Our podcast feed is spreading, and you can subscribe to all of it looking for us on iTunes. Do it and leave reviews, leave us comments, give us 5 stars, 4 stars. It helps us get to the top of the iTunes charts. Everything helps.
5 stars only.
Don't settle for anything less than the best.
No.
5 stars.
5 stars. We're worth it.
Just like Eddie Guerrero, 5-star frog splash.
Rest in peace. All right, let's talk about the news of the day then, because we've gotten this far. First up, I didn't think this would happen. Did any of you guys think this would happen? Like, it finally happened.
It had to happen.
I don't know.
It was going to happen, 100%. It was just a matter of when.
Before or after the heat death of the universe?
Well, we got the win and the why, so.
Steven Tulloch, linebacker for the Detroit Lions, has finally been released by the team. This comes, what is it now? So give me the timeline, Jeremy. It was 5 months from his Instagram post?
About middle of February is when Tulloch originally went on to Instagram and said his goodbyes to Detroit because, I mean, reading between the lines, the Lions told him, you know, you're donezo, we're going to cut you. And flash forward, we start getting rumors right around the draft that he's going to get traded. Didn't end up getting traded in the draft, didn't end up getting released. Everyone's trying to figure out what's going on. We're interviewing Bob Quinn, we're interviewing Jim Caldwell, nothing, they won't say anything.
And before that, too, we had the whole situation, free agency, like the question of his roster bonus, and the Lions ended up like giving him the roster bonus.
Yep, $500,000. I believe it was guaranteed anyway, so he was gonna get it either way. Everyone remained tight-lipped throughout the whole process. Stephen Tulloch actually, you know, he was out touring for his book release, and he started getting interviewed, too. And the strangest part about this whole saga is that throughout pretty much the whole process, what ended up being true, which is that he had an injury and didn't pass a physical, so the Lions were just waiting for him to pass a physical, that whole theory was apparently debunked when they talked to Stephen Tulloch about a month ago, and he said, yeah, there's no injury thing happening right now. I'm just kind of waiting for something to happen on the Lions' end.
So what do you think was going on there? Did he, like, what was that? Was him being coy about it, maybe? I don't think he was outright lying at that point. It just sounds like he was like, either he hadn't had the surgery yet, or he had had the surgery, so that he said, yeah, there's no injury, meaning that I've already had the surgery, thus I'm not injured.
I think that's more along the lines of what happened. I think Tulloch himself, and NFL physicals are weird. Like, you cannot pass a physical and not feel injured. And I'm thinking that's what originally happened here, was that the Lions were going to release him. Tulloch was like, cool. And then, you know, before you get released, you have to pass a physical just to make sure that you don't have an injury. Otherwise, you have to settle for an injury settlement. The Lions have to pay you.
That's probably a lot of money, too, considering what he is owed. I don't know, Alex, would you happen to know off the top of your head how much a one of these injury suits is kind of like settlements is worth in the NFL?
I don't know.
Like, it's honestly, I'm trying to remember in the CBA.
It's got to be more than the $500,000 that he would. Because I thought that if we cut him before a certain date that we wouldn't have owed him $500,000. So...
Yeah, before the calendars rolled over, which was around free agency.
Well, injury settlements are also based on how long you're projected to be out. So if the Lions were to cut him, you know,
but it's like a percentage of what your contract is worth too, right?
Right. It's basically prorated to how much time you're going to miss.
So it would have been in the millions.
I think it had to have been like over $500,000, I guess.
I think I saw Dave Perkett estimate that it was going to be like $1.1 million.
Okay, so they basically ate about half of that.
Yeah.
I guess that feels weird, though, because, like, I think he's going to get another chance in 2016.
Absolutely.
But it's so far along in free agency now, and OTAs are over, that the big question is, will a team have the chance to really land him?
And I think that's the question.
Like you're getting someone you don't know who hasn't been with you in OTAs, and you're just going to plug him into training camp. Okay.
He'll find somewhere. He's a veteran enough where he can probably be up to speed by the time.
Sure.
As long as he's on a roster by training camp. But the question is, like, did the Lions owe him a favor of releasing him early instead of saving, you know, half a million or a million or whatever it is they saved him. They saved the team. Wasn't that fair to Tulloch?
Sure.
Do the Lions have the obligation to be fair to Tulloch, or, you know, are they well within their right to just save money?
Well, they're certainly within their right to save money, but I think in the grand scheme of things, it just makes you, like, people are learning this, like, more and more when it comes to athletes and organizations. Like, this is kind of like, you can't just do whatever you want in a vacuum. Like, because players talk and players have the option during free agency to choose where they want to play, or even just, you know, where they want to do in contract negotiations for extensions, it kind of behooves an organization to not be giant jerks to their players. So, but this is also assuming a lot on Tulloch's part, that maybe Tulloch wanted them to figure it out, or there's a lot we're kind of speculating on, but I think it's worth speculating on, because again, I think Tulloch's free agency was harmed by waiting this long for, you know, this physical to get passed so they could save. God, that number from what the injury settlement would have been is kind of galling, because that's, again, like only twice as much as what they paid him for the roster bonus. And, like, yeah, I know it probably impacts the cap, but a spare $1 million to one of the guys who has been, like, incredibly good to your organization, incredibly good to, you know, the community that you're around, like, I don't know. In a vacuum, it looks bad, but I don't know. Ryan, what do you feel on all this?
I don't know. I just hope that Telic gets another chance with another team next year, and I think a lot of us all agree that he will get a chance. I don't know. I'm just kind of excited for Telic to move on because it seems like a situation which, you know, both the organization and the player were kind of just at odds with one another, I think, to kind of
I think everybody's talking about Philly, too, as his next destination because
Jim
of
Schwartz.
It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I had a guy who was like a Bills fan asking me if he would be a good fit in a Rex Ryan thing. I don't know. I mean, it's the wrong side of 30 with an ACL tear, so it's not going to be a ton of money, whatever it is, but he's probably better than some of these guys on the depth charts right now. But I think to what Jeremy's talking about, though, like, I don't know. I didn't really feel too much of that friction with the organization earlier on, but it felt like this was kind of growing out of control, too.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, Tolk has been extremely quiet throughout this whole thing and very respectable, like he's been his entire career. But you could even see it on him a little bit during those, like, those book interviews that he was getting exhausted. Like, he just wanted it to be behind him.
Yeah, this was the last thing he wanted to talk about during those book signings. Absolutely.
Right. And I think, I mean, whether this was just because they kept getting asked by the media or whatever, but both sides, I think, just wanted the issue to be over. And the frustrating part throughout it all must have been, like, they wanted so badly to just tell everyone, hey, wait a month. I'm going to pass the physical. Everything's going to be fine. But for whatever reason, whether it's, you know, the NFL's obsession with secrecy or whatever, you know, they had to be tight-lipped on the situation.
Yeah, I don't understand the secrecy. I don't understand a lot of this episode. I really don't. Like, a lot of it feels just really weird. And I'm still trying to piece it together, personally. Like, it feels gross in a lot of ways. And yeah, the Lions are within their rights to do all this stuff, but doesn't make for a great look in some regards, depending on how you read this.
I mean, doesn't it really just come down to a bunch of legalities that we probably just don't have the details on when it comes to contracts and whatnot? So, yeah. And then again, like we did mention that we have the Instagram post, you know, halfway through the month of February. So, I mean, this is something that we are all just kind of anticipating. And I mean, now it's finally just come to a head. And that's why I think, like, my main takeaway from the entire thing is I'm just kind of happy for Telic to move on.
Yeah, no, definitely. I'm happy to see him move on. Small conspiracy angle I want to throw by you guys. Do you think the Lions were mad at him at all on the fact that he basically hid Calvin Johnson's decision from them?
No, Jesus, no. is that?
Just throwing that out there. Just feeling up my crank for a second, giving the people in the comments some fuel to the fire.
No. That's something a different writer that I won't mention by name would come up with. But I think probably know who I'm talking about.
No, I don't, actually. That's the problem. I can name two different people. I can name you two different people.
Well, we're not going to get into it.
Okay. Why don't we take a break, then? We've got another former Lion to talk about on this podcast. It's all a bunch of people we've said farewell to in the past year. But the great one, the Megatron, the leader of the Decepticons, has finally spoken up from his realm of retirement and is speaking to ESPN's E60 program. I believe that interview is going live on Thursday night, but we have a little bit of sound and a few quotes from it early on, from what I understand. So we're going to be talking about Calvin Johnson and just everything that came out of that. And of course, coming up later on the podcast, we are doing Listcast, and it is tight ends this week. Once again, Ryan has pages and pages of notes because this is his thing. Continuing on here on the Pride of Detroit podcast, as always, Chris Lemieux, Ryan Matthews, Alex Reno, Jeremy Reisman. Our very own dearest Calvin Johnson spoke up from retirement today, which is Wednesday we're recording, as part of a E60 interview on ESPN that's going to be airing Thursday. Jeremy, if I recall, you've got some prime notes out of it already, though. There was like 3 minutes that are up on ESPN.com, and I think some beat writers out there are already getting some lines leaked out from what's going on with the interview.
Yeah, the original quote that went out there was regarding the reason why he retired and his thought process, and the kind of catchy Cliff Notes version is that he said, if we would have been a contender, it would have been harder to let go. Now, I saw the clip of this. It's part of like the trailer for the episode, and it sounds to me like one or two things happened here. The first two clauses of that sentence, if we would have been a contender, that part seems like it might have had something cut in between the next phrase, which was it would have been harder to let go. Also, there might be more to the quote. But either way, it's kind of a shocking thing to hear Calvin say, as was a lot of things in this interview. It was very interesting to see him so candid. And that's kind of how he's been since he's retired. He's been more active on social media. He's talked about gun control. He's talked about a whole lot of things, and it's just really interesting to see him come out of his shell. And I have mixed feelings about it. Part of me is like, that's awesome. I want to hear more about the person now that he's retired. But part of me is also like, well, why didn't you talk about this sooner? I mean, I would have loved to hear some of the stuff like DeAndre Levy's doing right now. I would have loved to see him go after the league, because he is going after league in some of these quotes. Right. He's talking about the doctors working with the NFL instead of the players.
Well, do we want to get into that? Because to me, the whole if we would have been contender is a very small sell in this interview. Right. It's a very small piece, but a lot of Lions fans, of course, latched onto it because it creates, again, everyone's favorite narrative, which is just basically self-flagellation over the sorry state of the Lions.
Right.
Like, but then...
I mean, the reason why I think that should have at least a little traction is because it probably did factor in his...
It would have factored in everyone. Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. I'm just not convinced that, you know, if he was on the Patriots, if he was on a Super Bowl contender, if he had a Super Bowl ring by this point, that his decision would be any different. It would make it a harder decision, which, of course, that makes sense.
We've only seen, like, a little snippet of what this interview with Michael Smith... has like put out that, you know, comes out tomorrow at 10 o'clock Thursday. But I mean, you guys have already probably heard it by now or seen it because this podcast will drop later. But I thought it was interesting how like there were like some surprising things, but at the same time, there was a lot of, the one thing that stuck out to me was like the dodging of the question by like Michael Smith. When he said, what kind of priority or how high of a priority do you think player safety is? And Calvin just kind of like, left turn. He was like, I really like the team doctors. He's like, I think that there's a lot of good people. And he like totally sidestepped like whether or not he thinks player safety is something that is of the utmost priority for the NFL.
And that's a good transition because a lot of the quotes that came out were about player safety and concussions and how much it hurts. And we kind of knew some of this about Calvin Johnson. We knew that he had basically was like taking like 2 Vicodin every game day. Like, what was it? His sophomore year or so when he had the shoulder injury, I believe, it was like one of his ribs.
Ankle.
He had the ankle bothering him, but it was something else on his body too, that was causing him to take the Vicodin. But
he had a lot of injuries. Calvin Johnson had a lot of injuries. I mean, that tied into the other thing too, though, is
a lot.
Yeah, like, with, you know, the first snippets of the interview that they showed, and you're like, Michael Smith said, so, like, why did you make the decision to retire? And he says, you know, the way my body felt mentally, like, all those things working together. And then when he says, is it a matter of you don't want to play or you can't play? And Calvin's like, it's both. Like, I mean, they kind of go hand in hand. And
he was saying he couldn't walk after game day. Like, he had to shuffle through his house.
Well, yeah, he said that it hurt to catch, which, I mean, that's your job.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounded like he was talking about, like, how he might have changed his mind or it might have made it harder if he was playing for a contender, but it seemed like he also made up his mind completely by saying that he didn't really want to be taking like pills every day. It hurt to catch. Like, it just seemed like it was such a huge burden on him to even play for another year.
And that's what we've kind of known for a long time too, and what a lot of people nationally have denied, and with constantly talking about he's still got something left in the tank. Like, everything we've known about Calvin Johnson was that his style of football, you know, going up there banging with three guys to catch the football, is going to be a style that is not sustainable, that it hurts. And yeah, it really hurt for him. Like the Vicodin, all the painkillers, like I know that the painkiller thing was a big thing, Jeremy, because he was talking about how he didn't want to just keep taking those things like nonstop.
Yeah, it wasn't part of the original interview that they posted, the 3-minute interview, but there was an article on ESPN talking about what he said about painkillers, which was basically, hey, all you have to do is shout out in the locker room, hey, my ankle hurts.
And you get Vicodin.
You know, you'll get tossed a prescription. Yeah. And yeah, I think one of the most important things, and you guys are kind of all talking about the short-term injury stuff, a lot of what he talked about was also the long-term injury stuff. He doesn't want to have to, you know, wake up every morning crawling out of bed or you know, with a crippling hand injury that, you know, we saw the pictures of that surgery earlier in the offseason, and like you were saying, it hurt to catch the ball. I have to imagine you do that for a couple more years, that sort of pain becomes permanent.
Absolutely. How many of those guys, like, what was it, Super Bowl 50, all those guys walking out there, like, you always notice how the camera doesn't show how they're walking when they're going back through, like, all 50 Super Bowl MVPs from, like, the previous right. years, like, notice how the camera doesn't catch them while they're walking out there, because they don't want you to see how these guys are limping or just shuffling to get out there. They're not walking right because their injuries are permanent. It's that he wants to try to get away from.
I was listening. Go ahead, Jeremy.
I was just going to say, and that's why this whole idea of him coming back is ludicrous. I mean, he knows the long-term effects of it. Why would he risk that?
Right. It's everything.
That's one of his major selling points right now is a long-term injury thing. Why in the world would he ever change his
mind? Yeah, like, it is everything we know about the NFL. It is a dangerous blood sport that is barely able to be played by human beings in its current form for any long period of time. And just because he was a wide receiver, like, that doesn't save him from all these injuries. Again, very physical way of playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
Brian, you were saying something?
Well, I think that kind of ties back in, because I thought one of the most interesting answers was the question, like I said, when Michael Smith asked him, you don't want to play or you can't play? And Calvin goes, well, it's both. Like, and I think that is him saying, like, I'm kind of just hedging my bets right now, and, like, I'm not going to risk... You know, I'm not going to risk a concussion. And he talked about how he thinks that concussions happen on, if not every play, every third play. Or, like, you know, he says all it takes is, like, your body to, or all it takes is your brain to touch your skull, and that's a concussion.
Right.
He's like, and that's happening on almost every play.
And he even says, I don't know how many concussions I've had over his career, because I think he's including in that micro concussions, like the idea of micro impacts or whatever. It's I forget the medical term, but the idea that, like, on every play, you know, your head, just because of the helmet, your head is going to get bounced, your brain is going to get bounced a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, and those add up just the same as, like, a full-blown concussion that leaves a guy just, like, dazed and confused for, like, 3 minutes or something.
And I'm sure this is something that's in the full interview, but they kind of, like, I don't know if he's actually going to show his finger in the interview, but when him and Michael Smith are talking, like, and they're talking about the injuries... Yeah, he's talking about, like, his finger right after he's talking about how, you know, it was starting to hurt for him to catch the ball. It almost kind of looked like they were going to show his finger. And I know that, like, that some of these players, like, when they retire, they have, like, trouble, like, picking up change off of a table. Like, they just can't do it.
Sure,
sure. Because their fingers are, you know, going each and every way, like the Jersey Turnpike. So, like, I don't know, it's crazy.
Yeah, like, again, this is part of the sport that just, it's almost grotesque and how it kind of, like, chews up bodies. I think there's something interesting to what you, though, bring up, Ryan, about, like, when he says it's a combination of can't and doesn't want to continue to play. Because, like, yeah, you can... If Calvin Johnson was of a mind, like a guy, like, just throwing it out there, like, you got to think there were some lifers in this game, like Deion Sanders, who kept coming back, like, nonstop to keep playing. Like, if he probably had that, he could probably go out and play and take those lifetime injuries. But as you say, like, who wants to have those? Like, it's very easy to beat up a guy for, like, not, like, so many dumb fans out there want to beat up a guy for not playing the game for whatever reason, because it's like, you're playing a game for a living, you should be blessed, da-da-da-da-da, but, like, feeling that pain firsthand, that does create a mental issue where you're kind of like, yeah, like, every living thing on this planet, if something causes pain, you want to avoid the thing that's causing you untold amounts of pain.
Well, so that's the thing about Calvin Johnson too, though, is that we've always talked about how he's a, you know, physical, like, he's just a, he's the type of physical, you know, species that we've never seen before in football. And like, a guy who's 6'5 and 235 and can move the way he does, like, I mean, how many times could you ever see that in your lifetime?
Sure.
And so, like, a guy who's that big should not be able to take the kind of abuse that he was able to take. And it's obviously just taking a toll on his body. And I think it's good on him to recognize that he should, you know, he should put his long-term health at the forefront of his concerns. And, like, it's I don't know.
He's also a really smart guy, too. Like, again, like, he had his pick of the litter and he went to Georgia Tech. Like, he went to Georgia Tech, where you can't really hide and get an easy degree if you're a football player. You have to do something that you would get at Georgia Tech. And, like, this guy, you know, graduated from there. He has, like, a degree in, it's something business related. I can't remember off the top of my head, but, like, you know, this is a guy who went around trying to build, you know, latrines in, like, Central or South America or something, too. Like, he is an incredibly intelligent man.
Like, yeah, I mean,
that plays a factor too. Because he can game out what this is going to do to his body.
Well, he's a guy who's also, you know, he's going to give back. I mean, he was back in Detroit working with the youth football camps, wasn't
right.
he?
Yeah, yeah.
That he has set up. So, like, I mean, this isn't some guy who is retiring and, like, completely distancing himself from the sport and even, like, the organization, or, I mean, even, like, the home or the city that his organization that he played for was in. Like, he's not just becoming a recluse and, like, going away and hiding and, you know, sitting on his pile of money like he's, you know, McScrooge or something like that. So, I don't know. There's this perception that, you know, if a player is leaving the game early, he's leaving something on the table. I don't think Calvin Johnson's really leaving anything on the table. I think he's making a smart move with his health. And I've kind of always felt that way ever since he made his decision.
Yeah, like, everything that he has done feels just very informed. And I really want to see this E60 thing on Thursday. And we'll probably have notes for you in Pride of Detroit. Again, if this podcast comes out on Thursday, you'll have something to look forward to. If it comes out on Friday, then this is a pretty good reason to kind of look for that E60 interview, because it's probably really, really good. E60 yeah. tends to be some of the better journalism that ESPN does.
I have one more note to touch on that I want to touch on, because I think it's a significant part of the story so far.
Sure.
And we touch on it a little bit. It's with the concussions. So not only was Calvin talking about how easy it is to get a concussion, but he said he'd had several concussions, and he was never, ever on an injury report listed as having a concussion.
Right, because he talks about how, you know, before a lot of this concussion awareness, it was all like, hush, hush, don't say anything yep. about concussions, because...
Right. Yeah, he even brings it up with the team doctors, yeah.
Right, because he talks right. about how it would be a liability for the franchise, right?
Yeah,
and we have a specific example of... It's pretty... I mean, it's not obvious that it happened, but it looks like this happened in 2012. Calvin Johnson went out of a game, but ended up playing through it in a game versus the Vikings. After the game, he says he suffered a concussion. Later, the Lions say he didn't suffer a concussion. Then Calvin has to double back and say, no, it was nerve damage, I was wrong.
Which, that's some technicality bull right there, yeah. And
I
we know...
At, yeah, like, I look at that game as, like, I remember that game, and I remember the Vikings players literally just going straight for his head almost every play, and just thinking that, like, that was just completely... like, crazy, and I wasn't surprised to hear that he might have had a concussion after the game.
Sure, and, like, again, like, this isn't something that went away just because, like, you know, the league realized that there was problems. Like, we already saw this problem still, like, you know, this last season, the Rasheen Mathis situation, where Rasheen probably gets a concussion and it just kind of sits there while on a trip to London. Like, this isn't something that's either new or it's gone away.
Illness.
Yeah, it's called, like, yeah, out with illness or whatever it is. Like, this isn't something that's gone away. And, yeah, like Calvin brings up a good point. I don't know how many legit concussions he got, how many were the just micro impacts, or just, again, like something there where it's just an impact he took that's not enough to really send him to the sideline to go through the protocol, but, you know, you still get your bell rung. Like, it's really hard to diagnose all this stuff.
It is.
So it'll be interesting to see, and, you know, this, again, this looks to be something really interesting, and just, I don't know if, like, I know, again, the Lions, you know, if they were a contender, I would have maybe harder to leave it. That's going to be the thing a lot of people are going to take away from it, but there's a lot here about, again, everything we have kind of known about the Calvin Johnson story about his retirement, which is basically, like, this is an all-time great, and being an all-time great doesn't save you from pain. Because this game will give everyone pain.
Yep. Can I add something real quick,
sure,
too? I guess I just looked it up, too, and I guess now that he's retired, he's actually going back to try and get his degree at Georgia Tech. And
oh,
I think
he didn't finish it. Okay.
Yeah, I think he's going back now, and I think it was engineering-related.
So let's take a quick break, though, and when we come back, we've got an interesting question to really go over, and then we're getting into ListCast, the top 10 tight ends for 2016. We have our list together, and this is, I think, is this the last one in our offense series, Ryan, and then we move on to edge rushers next week?
Yeah, unless you want to rank the top 10 long snappers.
Number one, Don Mulbach.
Number two, Don Mulbach. Okay.
Number three, whoever this kid is that's going to be replacing Don Mulbach.
Jimmy Landis.
This is in fact the last offensive list to cast, and then we'll get into defense, and then before you know it,
special teams.
It'll be training camp.
It'll be appetizers.
Oh God. Continuing on here on the Pride of Detroit podcast, before we get into the list cast for top 10 tight ends of 2016, devoid of fantasy or any other implication, just who are the best tight ends, we're going to take a quick question. We didn't have a mailbag this week, but I wanted to ask, this is a question that's been floating around on Twitter today, and it's a really good question. It is, what is the first major news story you can remember living through as a child? So, like, this is something that was, like, really big and engulfed the news. We're kind of all, you know, a little on the younger side. I was born the year of Challenger explosion, so I really can't say that. But I think we all have these memories, and it's always fun to kind of go back down memory lane. This is kind of our little mini self-ordained mailbag. So, Ryan, do you know what was the first big news story you can remember as a kid?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first big news story for me, being born in 1991, was I think it had to have been 9/11. I was in fifth grade, and I remember we couldn't go out on the playground for recess because they said there were bees on the playground, it was just a way of quarantining us, because, I mean, there were parents showing up in, like, masses. I mean, you guys, I'm sure, were still in school. I mean, there were parents trying to pull kids out of school, so, and then that was just, like, that was not okay. They weren't letting parents pull people out of school because they were just worried about all these domestic terrorist attacks. And I mean, that was probably the biggest news story that I can remember or first recall.
Yeah, like everyone, I think everyone can remember it, but I can definitely remember a little further back. Alex, is yours 9/11 as well? I think you're around the same age as Ryan here.
Yeah, me and Ryan were born in the same year, graduated the same year. Shout out 09. But, yeah, 9/11, I remember being in fifth grade as well, and I think I was, my mom picked me up and sent me over to my grandma's. I can't really think of any other major news stories between 91 and 2001. I guess that would be my top news story.
All right, and for me and Jeremy, I know I was born in 86. I think, Jeremy, you were born the same year as well?
Yes, sir.
All right, so let's go with you first, because I'm kind of curious to hear your answer.
Yeah, I have two. The first one that came to mind was Princess Diana dying. in her
car
crash. Well,
that's a good
what,
one.
What year was Diana's death?
I believe that was 97.
Was that 97? Yeah. Okay, okay.
Yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah, I was at my friend's house, and, you know, I was 11 at the time. It didn't really mean anything to me, but it was the first time I saw, like, parents, like, freaking out, crying. And it's still a little bit weird to me because I can't really draw a parallel of what that would be like nowadays when a foreign kind of leader dies like that. I don't know. It's a weird situation. Sure, I don't have an emotional attachment to it.
I remember a little bit of that, too. Like, because it kind of brought a very odd discussion along with it about paparazzi.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the other one, which is actually 2 years earlier, was the OJ trial decision. I was walking, I'm completely emotionally unattached. I think I was 9 at the time, or, you know, 4th, 5th grade.
Sure, yeah, that was, like, what, the decision, that trial didn't wrap until, like, what, 95?
Something like that, yeah, I think it was 95. And so, I just remember walking home from school and someone saying, OJ's free, or something like that. I'm just like, what, shut up, no way.
I remember watching that trial, too, but I didn't see the chase. If it was the chase, if I had seen... that would have qualified for my earliest memory. However, I believe I remember one thing prior to it that beats the trial decision by only a few months. And I remember the first news story I remember was actually the Oklahoma City bombing. And that was in April of 95. So again, it beats the OJ verdict by about, 6 months? Yeah, give or take. Like, but yeah,
that either happened on my birthday or right around my birthday, so I kind of remember
it
too.
Yeah, that was I think the first thing I remembered was the OKC bombing and just that whole kind of terror going around.
Yeah.
I have a better memory than I thought, considering like 95 I would have been like I wouldn't have even been 10 yet, so But I also wanted to bring up one other thing. I was kind of hoping this would have won, but I guess OKC beats it by about a year, but I was at Atlanta for the Summer Olympics, and I was like, so I was actually near like when the Centennial Olympic Park bombing went off too. So I kind of have pretty clear memories of two bombings earlier in my life. And then of course I also remember like, you know, the Kosovo War and what was it? It wasn't the original Gulf War, but there was another bombing in Iraq. What was it? Desert Eagle or something like that. A lot of memories of wars.
I think the one that might be kind of like analogous to Jeremy's Princess Diana one, because I mean I remember the Princess Diana stuff on TV. I didn't fully understand like the gravity of the situation.
Yeah.
By any means, but I think the one that kind of where I maybe didn't understand the gravity of the situation, but I was like cognizant and aware of it a little bit better than I think I would be like the Diana thing would be like the Columbine High School shooting.
Yeah, that was.
Ooh, that was 99.
Yeah, that was bad. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Okay, now that we've...
Well, that's a fun shit.
Why is it all the memories we have are of death?
Well, it's because all the news
what other news story would
I
you
guess,
hear?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't I know, a Super Bowl or something?
Yeah.
I guess you don't really think about, like, happy news stories.
You
like,
really
when you
don't.
Younger.
Yeah, like, it like, I'm even looking at all the answers from the Deadspin writers, and it's all JFK assassination, John Lennon assassination, Marvin Gaye's murder, Challenger explosion, Gulf War, OJ chase, here's one that's not war, death, the Lewinsky scandal for Bill Clinton.
Still not good.
All right, let's get on.
Can someone say, I remember the time our local zoo got a panda. That was fun.
Yeah, I actually remember.
Big news story.
I remember our local zoo, like, it was a red panda got, like, caught up outside of its enclosure of a high spot when a thunderstorm was coming in.
No. That's not good.
No, it was.
I love red pandas.
I think there was a happy end to that story, so don't worry, Alex. Everything turned out well.
Yeah, that's the thing. Even zoo stories are bad these days.
R.I.P. Harambe. Whatever happened to that orangutan, by the way, that got loose in Tampa? Does anyone know? That was like Harambe 2.0. I was kind of hoping someone would have an update on that.
Oh, God.
It's Florida. It probably ended similarly.
Yeah, yeah, probably. With no help from a zookeeper at all, either. Harambe's kind of like the hero of the 21st century, if you think about it.
Oh, okay. He's
a giant meme on Twitter now.
That's a hotter take than any of the positions in which we rank the following tight ends.
Yes. All right. So we have been doing list casts for the past 3-4 weeks or so. We've been doing positions and...
Chris, you sound exhausted.
I am exhausted. It has nothing to do with doing this podcast. I've got like stomach pain right now. So, okay. And it has nothing to do with listing tight ends. I just want to make that clear.
Nothing.
Because
I don't think anyone is exactly hyped for this as much as they were.
Well, I think one is going to be a wash. just FYI.
I don't feel like battling any of you guys for your tight end takes.
Yeah, like last couple
Damn
of weeks.
It. Why did I do all this research then?
Like last
just
couple
take
of,
everyone down a notch.
Last couple of weeks, we were like fighting over wide receivers and running backs. I really think we should just skip to edge rushers. But we're going to do tight ends because we have to. So we're going to do this again, alternating 9, 10, 7, 8. If you've been listening to ListCast, you know our format by now. Ryan, do you want to do the honors, kick us off at 9 and 10?
Absolutely. Let me start you off with my number 10 and 9 tight ends that I would like to have in the year 2016.
This is on in a vacuum, displaced from offense, system, quarterback. It's just we're taking a tight end for a replacement-level NFL team and plopping them on there for 1 year. Not fantasy points, just who can get you to win a game.
Number 10, Antonio Gates.
Okay, okay.
Not sure if he made a lot of your guys' list.
Reno just punched his computer screen.
Reno just punched his computer screen because he's so excited that I had Antonio Gates at 10. So the Ladarius Green experiment, that's finally done. They drafted Hunter Henry.
Who's a monster.
They drafted him with a fourth pick in the second round, so they're obviously very high on him. So I think this is the year where they finally got that successor to Antonio Gates, but I think that this is going to be kind of like a last hurrah for Antonio.
Sure.
I think that he's definitely still one of the top 10 tight ends of the league. He has no suspension this year, no injuries as of yet. 2 years ago, the guy had 12 tight ends, or he had 12 touchdowns. 70.4 catch percentage rate. I think that he's very much built in the mold of like Tony Gonzalez, and so I think that he does have like some. He still has some like, he still has some wear left to get out of Antonio Gates. So I have him at 10, and then number 9, I have Zach Ertz. Zach Ertz made my list. I don't know. I think that he's been criminally underused in Philadelphia. Last year he did have 75 catches, 67% catch rate. He's really good at stretching the field, and I think Doug Peterson was the offensive coordinator in Kansas City, so I think him coming over to Philadelphia, it's going to show like more of his talent. And I know this is supposed to be in a vacuum, but I think we're finally going to be able to see what kind of what kind of talent and skill set that Zach Ertz has. So I have him at 9.
Okay. Alex, why don't you give your 9 and 10?
Yeah, well, I punched my computer screen in happiness because I also have Antonio Gates at number 10. He's very old.
You guys are going to break your screens
so
doing that shit.
I don't have like catch rates in front of me like Ryan does, and I probably put my list together in about 2 minutes, but...
Antonio Gates remembers the Challenger explosion.
Sure, absolutely.
That's how old he is.
Absolutely.
Don't be mean.
I almost didn't.
Those
put
astronauts
him on my list.
Are dead, Jeremy. Dead.
I almost didn't put him on my list, but I said, "F it." It's Antonio Gates. He's awesome. And number 9, I have Benjamin Watson. Like I said, I'm not going to back up this list.
Yeah.
He's a good tight end. I think he caught a lot of touchdowns or something crazy. Yeah.
Can I ask before we go on, like, what's the main problem with listing a lot of tight ends? Is it just the fact that there's only like there we can't even get to 10 really in the league? There's, I would say, the number of good dependable tight ends is only like about like 6 or 7.
Dependable? No, there's a lot of.
I think there's more than that. I think we've gotten to a point in the league where we have a lot of like specialty guys, and I think that these tight ends who are coming in the league where they're like 6'6", 6'5", and they can, you know, run the field like crazy. I think that it's kind of, I think it's changed.
It's a position in flux. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's a position in flux. And we've seen kind of the blueprint completely changed on tight ends, where it's not as much about blocking as much as it is just getting that offense going, or like a, you know, even a two tight end set, like the Patriots run.
And they're about to run like crazy because, Go ahead with your list, because I want to see if this guy makes anybody's list.
Okay, I'll go ahead then. I'm going to do, at number 10, I have Julius Thomas. Again, don't have too much going on there. I can't even remember right now off the top of my head. I'm sorry, it's really hot here. I can't even remember which team right now Julius Thomas plays for. I'm trying to look.
Plays for your Jaguars.
For the Jaguars, that's right. But he had been on the Broncos in the past, and that's why I was thinking of the Broncos. But yeah, no. You know, he's still pretty young. He's about, like, what, 28? And he's a pretty good machine, you know. Again, I'm just trying to look up his stats right now. Stats. You know, he had, like, what, 450 yards. He had about, he was averaging around almost close to 10 yards per reception, really.
Yeah.
And five touchdowns. So, like, he even along of, like, 34 last year, too. Like, there's a lot to like about him as a passing threat. And
third to last in DYAR. Just get out there.
Julius Thomas did just miss my list, though, because I think he was injured last year a little bit.
He was.
He was banged up. So
yeah. First half of the year.
He only played like what, five games, but I think I'm not worried about, for whatever reason, I'm not worried about injuries with tight ends as much as when we were talking about like running backs. I don't know why, but
I'm still concerned, but yes, less so than running backs, but I'm still concerned.
You have to think with Julius Thomas, though. Was he the system of Peyton Manning?
Nah.
That will be seen this year.
I guess. I mean, I also like Bortles too. I like Bortles.
Sucks.
I like Bortles.
Who
do you have at 9, Chris?
At 9, I have Antonio Gates. I give him a little bit of a step up. Yeah, I give him a little bit of a step up of you guys, because again, I think old man strength and everything else, he just meshes so well with Phillip Rivers. And just again, I know we're not supposed to bring quarterbacks into it, but he's good. He's good until further notice, I guess.
He was able to fend off Ladarius Green, who was supposed to be his successor.
Right. Yeah, Ladarius Green was supposed to come in and just like completely just shiv the king. Yeah, he was supposed to kill the king. And when you come at the king, you best not miss. And Ladarius Green missed.
Yeah. So
Gates is still in charge. Jeremy, you're the last to do 9 and 10.
All right, well, the three guys that were just listed were not on my list at all, so no Benjamin Watson, no Julius Thomas, no Antonio Gates. Number 10, I have Gary Barnage, and I know he had, like, the third best statistical season last year, but prior to last year, he had 13 catches as his season high. I don't know what's going on with this guy. It's the weirdest thing I've ever seen. This guy has been around in the NFL for 6 seasons, and 5 of those seasons, 13 catches or less. Then he goes out, puts a 1,000 yards up, and like I'm not ready to crown this as the top 5 tight end that he was statistically, but you know, I have to give him props and at least put him on the list for last year's performance. Number 9, I got Tyler Eifert. He's a guy who I had a lot bigger hopes for this season. Basically, his entire career, he hasn't quite lived up to it. He's kind of had the Ebron track so far.
He's only played 2 seasons, right?
Yeah, so 3, you know, maybe? He's 2 or 3. So basically,
was he injured for one of those seasons too?
He did have an injury. Yeah. So he's actually had injuries for a lot of his career, and that's another reason.
Yeah, actually, I think he might have had an injury at Notre Dame as well. Yeah.
13 touchdowns though. 13 touchdowns.
I have no problem with you putting him this low, Jeremy. I almost wanted to put him a little bit lower on my list because I have some concerns too.
Yeah.
Especially that ankle injury. He's not going to be ready for the beginning of the season.
Yeah. Yeah. He just had surgery about a couple months ago. So we'll see. I guess you want me to get into 7 and 8?
Yeah. You do 8 and 7 next as well. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I got
I'm sorry. Go on.
I'll go into it.
Yeah.
I got a couple old fogies at 7 and 8 here. Number 8, I got Jimmy Graham. It might be unfair to call him old. He's only 29, but
He's going to be 30 next year. That's insane. Like, I can't believe Jimmy Graham's already 30 years old.
How right. the hell is he already 30? He does not look. He doesn't look 30. Is the thing too?
You age like double as fast when you're in New Orleans, I think.
that's true. No, that's absolutely true. The French Quarter is like a time warp.
I think people are sleeping on him a little bit now that he's in Seattle and maybe not utilized as much as he was in New Orleans. But I was looking at his stats. Among tight ends that have 40 receptions or more, he was fourth in yards per catch, which is 12.6. That's an outstanding number for a guy who's caught the ball even, you know, I think he caught it about 50 times last year. That's a really good number. If he were to get utilized more, he'd be putting up a lot more stats. And then number seven, I still have Jason Witten on my list. That guy, he's still carrying that Cowboys offense. He led the team in catches last year. He's still a very reliable blocker, which I don't know how much we're going to get into, but Jason Witten, good blocker still, and insanely reliable in terms of both catching the ball and injury-wise. That's a guy that if I'm just taking a guy for 1 year, he's still got it.
Witten still is
strong. I love me some Jason Witten.
Sure. Why don't you go then, Ryan?
All right. Well, number eight, I have Jimmy Graham. I thought what Jeremy brought up was probably the thing that I was going to key in on the most. He 12.6 yards per reception, still a very good number. Jimmy Graham, never really the blocking tight end that you kind of like mentioned earlier, Chris. You want your tight end to definitely be this new kind of version of the position where he can stretch the field, catch the ball, but you also need him to block, and Jimmy Graham was never really that kind of a blocker. So also concerned about that knee injury that he had really late in the season too. So he's still coming back from that. They anticipate he'll be ready by the start of the season, but we'll see. And then number seven, I had Jason Witten. Let me tell you why I love Jason Witten. 77 catches last year, a 74% catch percentage, zero drops, and 104 targets. So you guys do the math. 104 targets, 77 catches, but no drops. How shitty were his quarterbacks last year? Brandon Whedon, Matt Castle.
Kellen Moore.
Kellen Moore.
God.
The other thing, too, I actually wrote on here, played with clowns at quarterback all year. and the man is going to play 16 games because he has only missed one game his entire career.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Durability is a skill.
Okay, I can go next, I guess. We'll leave it to Alex to pick up. Was it Alex or Jeremy who's going to pick up after me? I forget. I'm sorry.
It would be me.
It's really hot in here, so it's just kicking my butt.
Yeah, and just having a rough night.
I am. Number eight, I had Jimmy Graham as well. I think that I really don't know what to make of him because he was like really awesome in New Orleans, but he just suffered under Seattle, and a lot of people are saying, well, Seattle's not using him right, but I guess the question is like, I don't really understand then, like, you know, what would differentiate him, like, on this theoretical team that we are putting him on. I really want to put him higher, because I think at his height, he is really, really, really good, like we saw him in New Orleans, but if it's on the theoretical replacement level team, I guess the question is, which Jimmy Graham am I going to get? Am I going to get the Seahawks tight end, or am I going to get the New Orleans tight end? Like, I don't know which is which.
I just never understood Seattle trading for him in the first place. I understand New Orleans needed to unload his contract, but he just never seemed like the right fit in Seattle. Sure, I don't know why they did it.
Well, and they also traded Max Unger, which is one of you know, Chris's favorite position. I mean, trading a center who, you know, is kind of like the foundational block of your running game. Well, I'm being serious, though. Like, trading Max Unger is like, that's like a, I mean, you're trading like the guy on like your offensive line for Jimmy Graham. I mean, I understand it in a way.
Yeah, I don't know. Don't know what to really make of it. And number seven, he's kind of come on a little bit. I'm trying to look up his stats, so I'm not just completely flubbing myself here. But at number seven, I have, where is it? Why do I only have the fantasy? Okay, here we go. At number seven, I have Travis Kelce. Kind of came on fairly recently, but, I mean, this guy's, for what they asked him to do in Kansas City, like, for an offense that really doesn't get a lot of yards down the field and seems to dink and dunk on these awful, disgusting, like, screen plays nearly every time, he averages close to about 12 yards per reception in 2 years with Kansas City, from what I understand. He didn't play much in 2013, but, like, he's got about, like, what was it, 2014 was a 77% completion, about 70% last year, five touchdowns each year. So, like, he seems dependable enough. And from what I understand, how big is this guy? Like, 6'5", 255 pounds. Like, he's big enough that he can block, too, because that's a fairly stout offensive line that Kansas City throws out at you. So, but he's got the offensive weapons to make him pretty good as well.
I dig it. I like Travis Kelce. He's on my list.
Yeah.
Mine too.
All right. Reno, why don't you go? You're 7 and 8.
Yeah. First, I want to say that Jason Witten did not make my list. And I'm a pretty big Jason Witten fan. But if we're talking about having a guy on our 2016 team, like, this guy is pretty old. I know he caught 77 passes, but he also
Than Antonio Gates.
Yeah, but he also, like, had a significantly lower yardage total than most of these guys who caught over 60 passes.
Dude can block, though, man.
They had clowns and he can do both.
Who are you talking about?
And then people are going to say, oh, well, he's, like, a chain mover and stuff. But, like, his first down percentage is also significantly lower than everybody else. So, I don't know. Like, he'd probably be maybe, like, 11 or 12 on my list. But he did not make my list. Number 8. Chris just mentioned him. Travis Kelce, 12 yards average, or 12 yards per
reception.
Catch average? Yeah,
probably some yardage after the catch, too. Just, again, on how Kansas City runs that offense, but yeah.
Yeah, I remember he had a pretty huge start to the year. Now we're talking about fantasy football, sure. But he was a pretty big pickup on the waiver wire early in the year. Caught 72 passes. Number 7, I have Gary Barnidge, who I think Jeremy mentioned already.
Yep.
Caught 9 touchdowns, and I don't remember Cleveland having any good quarterbacks. He had some pretty sick catches in the end zone that I remember, too.
Really, like, good catches.
Yeah, pretty, like, a couple of one-handed grabs,
some
I believe.
Weird trick catches, yeah. What do you think, like, is he going to improve? Like, I know we're kind of stepping outside our theoretical team. You think he's going to look better or worse with Robert Griffin, though? Like, is that was my – I wanted to put Barnbridge on my list, but that was the one thing holding me up is, like, I mean, I know he's played with crappy quarterbacks, but the RG3 experience is a little different.
Probably about the same. I mean
– I guess.
I'm not a huge RG3 fan, but he can't be a ton worse than, like, Johnny Manziel and – Hoyer and whatnot, but yeah, he caught 79 passes, I believe, which was third in the NFL last year. I know he had a pretty weird start to his NFL career, but I mean, if he can continue to be the player that he was last year, he looked pretty darn good. So I guess I'm going to my 6 and 5 then.
Yep, 5 and 6. Yep.
All right. Number 6, I have Jimmy Graham. He didn't really look great in Seattle's offense, but I mean, I want my tight end to be a guy that can sky over people and catch touchdowns. And, I mean, he still has that freak athletic ability. So I don't know what it was with Seattle's offense and why he wasn't able to put up the same numbers in New Orleans, but I still think he does have that ability. And number 5.
Well, hold on. Before you say number 5, I think one interesting thing about Graham, and I think that he could have been much higher on my list, but it's going to be interesting to see how Seattle's offense maybe develops or evolves from, you know, being able to count on Marshawn Lynch to get the ball 25 times a game. Are they going to do that same kind of thing with Thomas Rawls and, you know, the cast of backs that they have now? Or maybe are they going to change their offense a little bit more? Because if they do get Jimmy Graham more involved, then, I mean, I could definitely be eating crow for putting him at number, you know, 8 on my list.
I think we all will.
So,
yeah.
I'm definitely interested to see how they use him this year because he was definitely underutilized. Number 5, I believe I would be the first to mention this man's name, is Jordan Reed. who probably might even be higher on your guys' list, but I'm not 100% sold on him. I know he caught the second most receptions last year, 11 touchdowns, but I have trouble even calling him a tight end because he's more of like a slot receiver to me. He's like 6'1", I believe, and he's not much of a blocking tight end. Like it just seems even weird to even call him a tight end.
That's the way the tight end position is going, though. Like we keep talking about this. It's a position in flux. So, Jeremy, why don't you do your 5 and 6?
All right, at number 6, I don't know if anyone's mentioned this guy yet. I don't think they have. I have Delanie Walker. He's a guy who's been very productive lately since he moved over to Tennessee, but he did nothing in San Francisco, and he's turning 32 this year. So I think he's peaked. I think he's also a bit of a product of the system, but he's also been in, you know, the top 5 statistically the last couple of years. So, you know, he deserves to be right around that 5-6 spot, my opinion. Number 5, I have Zach Ertz. I know it's probably going to be a little high for some people. In his 4th season, he's increased in yardage every year. I think he's only going to increase even more. I think last year he had about 800 yards. I think he might get close to that 1,000 mark this year. I'm just a really big fan of Zach Ertz.
Okay. Ryan, why don't you do your 5 and 6?
All right. So at number 6, I have Tyler Eifert. We talked about Eifert a little bit. Couple of interesting stats for Eifert. 52 catches, 13 touchdowns. All 13 of his touchdowns came from either 22 yards or in. So this guy is just a red zone monster. He does a lot of his damage down in the red zone. 8.1% drop rate, though. Dropped 6 balls last year. That is actually higher than Eric Ebron. So, yeah, health is a concern with him too. Like we talked about, the ankle surgery, he's probably not going to be ready by the start of the season. And it's always kind of been a concern for him. He missed almost all of 2014. The most interesting thing, going back to this, this idea that Eifert is just a red zone monster, 11 red zone touchdowns on 16 red zone targets.
Monster.
And he had, 12 total catches in the red zone. So, he does a lot of work down there. So, Eifert at number 6, and then number 5, Rick Flaring walking his way onto my list is Travis Kelce. He has incredible touchdown celebrations. this is amazing about Travis Kelce, though. 875 yards last year through the air. 536 of those yards were after the catch.
That's okay. That was the stat I was looking for that you apparently had already queued up.
61.3% of his receiving yards were all because of him.
Yeah.
So
again, Alex Smith doesn't throw down the field that much.
There's only one guy who had more yak than he did, and he's all going to be at number 1 on our list. But Travis Kelce, I like the fact that he's a big body and he's able to get yards after the catch. So I like him at 5. Okay.
My number 6 is Jason Witten. No, I think we covered him pretty well enough. I think that this guy doesn't drop the ball if you throw it his way, though. Like, that's just fantastic to me. Like, I think you're right. I think that is a pretty interesting piece of that Cowboys offense that never really gets talked about that much. So, and then at number 5, I have Delanie Walker because, again, I am a person who believes in old man strength and I don't really know how to really justify what happened with San Francisco. I know probably you could probably point to Harbaugh being a weirdo. But, yeah, he looks really good in Tennessee. I don't know really what to say. He averaged was like 14 yards per reception in 2014, and he had a 70% catch rate in 2015. Like, yeah, I think – but his yards also took a huge spike once he had, like, an actual quarterback throwing to him too. Like, he had over 1,000 yards last year with Mariota. So, food for thought in that regard. Just get him with a – like, who was the quarterback in Tennessee before Mariota, aside from Mettenberger?
Jake Locker.
Yeah.
Locker and Whitehurst, maybe?
Yeah, Locker, Whitehurst, and, like, Mettenberger for, like, 2 games before J.J. Yeah. Watt ripped his head off and mounted it on a pike in his fake log cabin. All right, I guess I have four and three then. So four for me is Tyler Eifert. This is Notre Dame bias a little bit here too. I will fully admit it. But
I love it.
But there's also some Football Outsiders bias to this too. First in DYAR, first in DVOA for 2015. First in DVOA by a pretty wide margin too, 42%. Like the next closest I think is at 36%. It's weird. It's like, is it Brent Celek? Okay, whatever. Either way, like just incredibly efficient. And like everything about him, like I think, yeah, you get over the injuries. I think his upside is really good, and I will always go for that kind of upside. Number three, I have Jordan Reed, so I'm a little higher on it than was it Alex? You had him.
Yep.
Like
I probably have him the lowest out of all four.
Yeah, I think he's really good. I really excited to see what happens with him. Like just. What do we hit? Let me see what we have here. Like, what was it? 11 touchdowns last year. He really broke into it. He didn't really. The one thing that kind of got me a little concerned was he was really quiet in 2014. But again, upside being what it is, I think it looks pretty good for him. And like, yeah, he is a little bit more of a slot receiver, but I think that's fine. It's flexibility to him too. You know, if you can put him in the slot, yep. Then you can just put another. You know, put someone, another blocker on the line, just makes him more valuable in my mind.
Ryan, do you happen to have Jordan Reed's drop rate? Because I felt like he dropped a lot of passes last year as well.
I do, and I'll save that for when I talk about him.
Okay.
All right.
Well, why don't you take up the mantle then for four and three?
4 and 3? Well, perfect, because Jordan Reed is number 4 on my list.
Okay.
87 receptions, 68 yards per game, a 76.3 catch percentage rate, highest catch percentage rate of any tight end with at least 38 targets. Only dropped 2 balls in 114 targets for a 1.8% drop rate.
Wow.
Maybe I'm wrong.
So big fan of Jordan Reed. I think the only reason that he isn't higher on my list is, we kind of talked about it. Reno talked about it when he put him on his list earlier, is that he's just not the kind of blocking tight end. But like Chris has mentioned too, though, is that we're kind of getting into this new wave of tight ends that we've seen over the past 5 or 6 years. That we have these like speedier, jump up, make spectacular catches kind of tight ends. So I have Reed at number four, right?
Yep.
Number three. He was almost number two, but at number three, I got Delanie Walker. Let me tell you how much I love Delanie Walker. First of all, when you were talking about his time in San Francisco, Jeremy, let me talk about the quarterbacks that were throwing the ball to him.
Oh,
JT O'Sullivan,
Alex Smith,
and Trent Dilfer in his rookie season.
Trent Dilfer was in his rookie. Oh my god!
Yeah.
Well, he is 30 something.
Yeah. He was there in he got drafted in 06, I believe.
07 was his first touchdown catch, and it was from Trent Dilfer.
Yikes.
Delanie Walker, man. I love this dude. 94 catches last year, 72.5 yards per game, 6 games with more than 90 yards receiving. He was a huge threat for them, really kind of like their only receiving threat. 4 of his 6 touchdowns were within 10 yards of the goal line, but 2 of his touchdown receptions were over 50 yards. So, I mean, not only can he's only 6'1", but he's this, like, big body who can just, like, find and create space in the end zone. But he's also a guy who can catch the ball and run for 50, 60 yards and, you know, score a touchdown. 14 receptions of his 17 targets in the red zone. 82.4% catch rate in the red zone, first among tight ends with at least 6 targets. So there's nobody, not even Tyler Eifert, who's a better red zone target than Delanie Walker.
Sounds cool. Right. Let's let
you.
What? What? I'm suffering cool. Here, man.
I was dropping facts.
Charlie. Right. Let me try it again then. Yeah, that's really cool. That's really cool, Ryan. Really, really cool.
Really excited, about that.
32-year-old.
Great job. Number 4, I have Tyler Eifert. Your drop percentages, fuck your injuries. This man caught 13 touchdowns last year. Number 1 in DYAR, number 1 in DVOA. Just toss him the ball, he's going to catch it and score a touchdown.
Can't toss him the ball when he's on the sidelines.
Hey. Stop it.
He won't be on the sidelines next year.
No, he won't. He's fine.
He's fine.
Could get in the tire. See what happens.
Number three, I have to agree with Ryan. I have Delanie Walker. God, what can I say? He caught 94 passes last year. I mean, I know we're not talking about his system and team and situation and all, but this man's going to have a huge year because who the hell does Mariota have to throw to right now?
Other than him. Yeah, absolutely.
Irrelevant.
Jeremy, what's your 4 and 3?
My number 4 is Travis Kelce. I think Ryan did a really good job of talking about how awesome this guy is and how promising his career. 2 straight years where he's had over 800 yards and at least 5 touchdowns. And he's only 26, so I think his future is bright. Number 3, imagining this is ever. You got something more?
I want to say one last thing about Travis Kelce. We talked about his yak. He was 9th in the league in yak among all players who caught footballs last year. Running backs, tight ends, wide receivers, he was 9th in yak.
That's pretty good. That's cool.
Yik yak,
cool.
Man.
Really cool. Go ahead, Jeremy.
All right, my number 3, and I imagine the reason his name hasn't been read yet is because all of you have him at number 2, is Greg Olsen. This guy has had 8 straight years of 5 touchdowns or more. He's had 2 straight years of 1,000 yards or more. I don't know what else you can say about the guy. He's been a staple of that offense since he's been there, and I think, you know, he's going to continue for at least a couple more years, even though he's getting up there in age. The only reason I don't have him number 2 is age.
Well, why don't you tell us who you have at number 2? You have 2 and 1.
Number 2 is Jordan Reed, which I think, not too high on your guys' list. But
I had him a 3.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, he had 11 touchdowns, as you guys mentioned, last year. He's only entering his 4th season. Again, I kind of favor these young guys up here because once they kind of hit that, you know, trajectory of going straight up like this, I think it's only going to even increase even more. I really like Jordan Reed a lot. And then why not? I'll say the first words that come
well,
to
why don't you,
everyone's
why don't you
mind.
Save, why don't you actually, you know what? Why don't we save number 1? Because we all have him there. So,
yep, Eric Ebron.
I'm assuming Ryan.
I'm assuming that it might be Eric Ebron because Reno doesn't care about drops.
Ryan, Alex, you both have Greg Olsen number 2, right?
Correct.
We do.
So let's just talk about Greg Olsen a second then.
All right, Greg Olsen, 77 catches last year, 1,100 yards, 14.34 yards per reception, second to only the guy we all have at first of tight ends who had at least 70 receptions, 8.9 yards per target, second to only the guy that we all have at first of guys who had at least 47 targets. Greg Olsen was also the only receiving option that was even able to not drop footballs last year. I didn't even bother looking up how many balls Ted Ginn dropped, but I love Greg Olsen. How happy are we that he is not in our division?
Very happy.
How happy
Very
are
happy.
We that he is not with the Chicago Bears?
Yep.
They tried, man. They tried. And then number 1, like this man has his own energy drink. This man has his own Nickelodeon show. This man had his own boat cruise. This man does not care what you think. They broke
Yo Soy Fiesta.
Yo Soy Fiesta, the greatest of his clan to play football. And there's another one that came into the league this year too. I believe his brother Glenn. I think he's play. What does Glenn play? Is he a?
He's fullback, maybe.
I think he is. I think you're right. It's full. It's fullback with the Bills is Glenn.
Yeah.
But this guy is the original one. This is the Gronk. We don't need to say anything else. Like, this guy has kept Tom Brady's career afloat.
Ooh,
I kind of want to hear Ryan go off on his statistical.
I'm just telling you, man, you go back a couple of years where everyone was like, what's going on with Tom Brady? He looks awful. It was because Gronk wasn't on the field because Gronk was
Stop
coming off that injury.
Right
and when, what happens when what happened when Brady. Gronk came back? Everything got better. Gronk is a human cheat code.
Okay, I love Gronk, but you lost me at this man.
I'm just saying, like, Brady's probably not putting up all these numbers without Gronk doing all this for him.
Podcast.
Didn't he have to for at least a little bit last year? Gronk missed a game or two, right?
Missed one game because in that Denver game, he got absolutely, like, he got lawn-chaired.
Yeah.
And I thought he was going to be out for, like, the rest of the season, and he came back after one game.
Yeah, this guy defies injury, too. That's, like, the one thing. Like, he gets beat up and injured a lot, and I know it was, like, a big deal because he was, like, partying with an injury, but he'll come back and he'll keep going.
It was the game after the Denver game where Brock Osweiler led them back and they won in the snow.
So Tom Brady still went 29 for 56, 3 touchdowns. It's fine.
Is it too much of a hot take to say that Gronk is, at his respective position, he's like the best player in football?
I would say he's probably the best tight end of all time.
Like, is he a better tight end than Aaron Rodgers as a quarterback?
I'd have to say yes, really actually. Yes, I would say yes.
You're just saying relative to the rest of the NFL.
Yeah, relative to the rest of the NFL, like, is Rob Gronkowski. Like, I mean, let me say some of these stats that Jeremy was kind of wanting.
I don't even need stats. I just need to watch him play. He is like letting a polar bear loose on the field.
72 catches for 1,176 yards. 16.33 yards per reception, best among tight ends, with at least 4 receptions. 11 touchdowns, 1 drop in 120 targets, 0.8% drop rate. 7th in the league in yak among all players. Like, it's insane. Is he going to be the best tight end of all time?
Yes, absolutely. He already is in my book. Like, who is he sharing the stratosphere with?
Tony Gonzalez.
Okay, Gonzalez. That's a good one. You got me there. But yeah. I think by the end of his career, he's probably going to stand better than Gonzalez. Like, Gonzalez is really good, but, like, just look at all the stuff this guy has done, you know. And again, just all the accolades. He's only gotten one Super Bowl ring. I just realized that he's only got one from Super Bowl 49.
Yeah, he's 27,
he's only been in the league like 6 years. Like he's going to keep doing stuff. He's 27. Yeah, like, and again, like, he's reached a status like what we have with a lot of European soccer players, where you know them by like their first name or a nickname, like Messi or Cristiano. We know him as Gronk. Like, we identify him as Gronk. Like, that, my belief is that when you reach that status in a sport, it really doesn't matter at that point. You are just one of the greats.
Well, so, I mean, there's a player that the Patriots acquired this offseason that didn't make any of our lists. Martellus Bennett.
He was 11. I literally have him at 11.
How scary is that, that they're going to have two tight ends?
Two tight ends. Oh, my
Bennett
God.
And Gronkowski. Yeah.
Yep.
I'm still double teaming Gronk for that.
All right, pause. But, okay, so I mean, quick rapid fire, Jeremy, do you think your relative position, Gronkowski, the best player in football?
Yeah, I think he separated himself from the pack more so than anyone else maybe at their position, outside of maybe JJ Watt.
Would you say Gronk is as good as what he does as is John Cena?
Two on in the ninth. Can we just go?
I knew it. Mother f***.
Help me out.
Can we cut to break?
We are in break.
How many outs?
One out.
One out. Two on. They finally brought in David Robertson, so their closer's in. He's got Gregorius on a 1-2 count.
Oh, I just saw it. It looks like they picked off.
Oh, the double play?
Double play.
Yeah, baby, let's go!